Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, I'm Justin.
And I'm Lucy.
And together we are the hosts of Plenty Questions.
It's a very straightforward general knowledge quiz.
We ask you 20 questions, one after the other, 5 second gap in between, and you shout the answers out.
And then you tweet us to let us know how you've got on.
See if you can get 20 out of 20. No one has so far, but that's because we haven't started doing it yet.
But we will. And there's also going to be some fiendish brain teasers, so join us for Plenty Questions.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
King.
Jamie Lang should not be here. He should not be here. Boo, Jamie Lang should. You get the general idea. Welcome back to The Curse of Strictly. I'm quite angry. How are you, Joel Morris?
You've got a new song.
It's a new angry song. It's not very festive, is it? Happy Christmas, everyone. It's semi-finals week. And, well, it was a ram-packed show full of fun and laughter, but also some anger for me. We'll explain that later. In fact, no, we'll explain it now. I don't know. As we stand, we don't know the results. I am consumed with fear that Biscuits is going to be saved in favour of another much better dancer.
Biscuits has to be there.
Now, why? What?
Biscuits is apparently the meaning of Christmas, like a family circle tin. I don't know.
Oh, I see.
I don't know. I mean, Biscuits are a festive thing. I don't know. I can't work it. There's got to be a reason why Biscuits is still there, bearing in mind that this appears to be... This is semi-final week for everyone, but it appears to be week three for Biscuits. And
yes,
it has been week three for Biscuits since week three.
Right, he's living in a different time parallax or something.
Actually,
is that
oddly,
even a thing?
When he started, because I thought he'd be absolutely rubbish, he was kind of week three in week one.
Yeah.
And he's remained week three throughout. And
he's had the same score for the last 3 weeks, 8-8-8.
It's a very strange thing to watch because the whole point of, as we know with these shows, is to watch the journey. The journey.
Right. He hasn't had one. He's a flatline.
Absolutely no journey. Like maybe people of his class who have no struggle, no journey, no story.
Oh, are you saying because they've never had to strive for anything in their life, perhaps they don't understand the power of going from nothing to something?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right there.
There you go. That's sociological analysis
of
why Jimmy Biscuits is still there.
Class inequality in this country will persist until all of him and his kind are against a wall with a firing squad. That's all we're saying. Not that this is some kind of red podcast. We're not those guys.
Strictly comrades dancing.
I'd just like to say I didn't get this angry about that woman who owns a zoo who was on the other series that time. I didn't get that cross about her. But for him, for some reason, I cannot stand how posh he is. Anyway.
Can I just point out, you're angry about him being posh and entitled because he's in a programme which you've watched every episode of, which only has posh and entitled people.
Of course it does. They're all privileged to some extent because they're all in show business.
Oh.
Sparkly dancers.
I didn't mean Strictly Come Dancing. I meant your Only Way is Chelsea program.
Oh, you mean because I've never missed an episode of Made in Chelsea. You choose to bring that up again now, presumably to weaken my case against
you just have this
class inequality in this country.
This absolute dislike of this one man who I can't tell the tiny, tiny micro privilege he has over everyone else in that program.
Oh, you're being gaslit too. No, I can see it's happening. You
but
know,
apparently he's the worst one. Right, okay, fair enough.
He is, trust me. Anyway, so this week they returned the family bubbles and our wonderful NHS workers in sparkly masks.
I love that
they were
bit.
Back, so there was atmosphere in the studio again, but they were all wearing like sparkly gags.
It was
really weird.
When I've been looking at things thinking, because the vaccine's coming, that let's say in a year we'll look back at anything from this period and it'll look weird.
Really odd.
And it'll look really strange. That was one of the weirdest things ever, because the way it's introduced, it does sound like you're in a socialist super state. It feels like Korea.
Genuinely.
And joining us are our glorious tractor factory workers and the people of the constructors of the revolution. And it's the phrasing used like our frontline health workers has become this mantra.
Yeah.
It's like you're in Korea.
No,
it's really weird.
It's odd. And also in The Handmaid's Tale, when they're gagged, they do and then wear like a face covering that looks exactly like that, but with less glitter.
Yeah.
So it was so dystopian. They've tried obviously different things. They tried see-through masks. They tried black masks.
They
tried
the D's for?
Glittery
SCD,
ones.
Dystopia.
Yes.
Socialist.
Stop.
Dystopia. That's what it stands for. When they have their own flag. I mean, I obviously I wrote the after the event Remain Indoors sketches from Mitchell and
Webb.
You
did, yeah.
And this year I keep turning on the television and they're on telly. This
it's really upsetting.
It did feel, this whole thing felt like they're in a bunker. They are the last people on earth.
Yes.
And you know what happens to when Caroline Quentin sent away, she sent out into the wilderlands.
Yeah. To get the radiation poisoning and die under a bush.
Or bring justice to the cursed earth with a gun over her shoulder. I don't know, something like that. There's something grim going on outside the bubble. There's a feeling that they are the last survivors.
Don't look outside the bubble at all costs. Remain inside the bubble and to drag your gaze towards the centre.
Yeah, where they'll be sparkly dancing, sparkly dancing.
So, yeah, they did have a bit of an audience this week, which does sort of make a difference. But like we said, it's a slightly unnervingly gagged audience. And the first dance-up, we might as well just crash straight into the semis now. The first dance-up was Jamie and Karen. The training video this week was, I thought, the most revealing thing yet I've seen of Biscuits. And actually, almost for a second, but I wasn't fooled for long, almost made me feel something for him. So they're watching, you know, everyone gets inspirational videos from home and work and stuff this week. They're really laying that on thick, all five couples. And there's a video where Jimmy Biscuits is watching, you know, his brother, I think his sister or someone else.
Lots of posh
his
people.
His girlfriend, lots of posh people.
Thoroughbreds.
Yeah, well, holding their thoroughbred children. clip-clopping past the camera. and then obviously, and it appears from the way it's filmed that his mother and father aren't together. I don't know if that's true or not.
I think that's just how posh people are.
They just all live in different wings of the house.
Yes. There was quite a big gap. When his mum and dad do talk to each other, there's a huge delay, like they're like Mars.
One's in Australia, one's in Africa.
But that's just normal.
But anyway, so his mum said, oh, you know, we just hope everyone gets to see what a nice person you are. Of course she would say that. She's blinded by, you know, him being her son. And then it cuts to his dad, who's this sort of, obviously one of those very posh bohemians who's wearing a kind of, you know, bohemian necklace around his neck, so he looks a bit alt. He doesn't look like the straight down the line posh dad.
He's been to Goa. He met a man called Raz.
I would say he probably still lives somewhere abroad. Like, he doesn't look like he lives in this country. And he said, you know, he was sort of saying all the things you say on one of these Strictly messages. We're really proud of you. Keep going. We're doing great. And it cuts back to Jamie, who obviously has been going, oh, why am I crying? Oh, this is ridiculous. And his dad's message, for some reason, he just sort of chokes and says, my dad never says anything like that. And it was just a really telling. It was almost the only time I think I've seen the real Jamie.
Yeah. It was like when the top comes off a Dalek and there's a little blobby thing inside waving its tentacles.
A little sloppy Davros.
A little vulnerable thing inside the casing. And it was really weird because his dad seemed to be, it wasn't like his dad was sort of a gruff, bad dad type.
No.
A bit of the kind of guy who might get Jamie. But the feeling that his dad had said a couple of quite bland, parental, we're proud of you things. And it got Jamie quite clearly sort of a little bit from an unexpected angle.
It seemed to do, yeah.
You thought, go, when you say your dad has never said stuff like that to you, do you mean your dad's never spoken to you before?
I mean, it could be that. He could just be, he's been saving African elephants and not been around.
Yeah,
or,
it really got to him. And it felt really human. And I must admit, I was a sucker for all the messages from home this week. I think that was actually good. They all got a message from someone they either worked with.
Well, even Piers Morgan.
No, because I suppose what it gives you a sense of the world from which they're from.
Yes.
So you get cruel paternal figures like his dad or Piers Morgan.
True.
But it was a mixture of some people they've worked with and things. And they've been on a journey, in inverted commas, and they've been in a bubble.
Yes.
And I don't think you can quite realise, if you have been in that kind of bubble, I don't know what their communications are like, and they probably play this, they milk it a bit. But the idea of people from outside that bubble, if you've been a few days away from your family and things, they really get to you. And I thought the humanity of it, reminding you of where they were from. Because they've been Strictly Come Dancing people now for a few weeks, and it's interesting to go, oh, actually, they have got mums and dads and grannies and granddads and kids and things. It was nice.
It reminded you of some of their humanity. Anyway, then Jamie and Karen did a salsa. I can't remember what to. Oh, no, that's right. This was The Last Dance.
Yes.
This is The Last Dance.
Even Dave Arch and the band are sending a message, a strong message.
No, do it to this song, this song. Anyway, it wasn't his last dance. Obviously, he did another one after this. They're all doing two this week. Obviously, should mention that. So again, we're just going to go around in circles. We've talked about Jamie dancing before. He seemed to pick up all the steps.
Yeah.
He did them quickly. This is like me talking about when I reviewed Downton Abbey and said it was a long stream of correctly spelled words. Like, it's not really praise in that sense, is it? He does the dances. He doesn't have the music in him. He's not dancing with the music or with Karen, I'd say. He's just slightly angrily bashing the steps out. And obviously he did a couple of lifts in this, which are difficult. And they commented that was progress and stuff. But there was the final lift was basically his face in her crotch, which made me very uncomfortable.
Yeah, he's good. But he's the same good as he was at the beginning. He's surprisingly...
Oh, he's no better, yeah.
Yeah, he's completely static. And what's strange about him is he seems to... I don't know whether dancing is good or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I am, like most of the audience, responding to the music.
Yeah, you can only enjoy or not enjoy.
Am I not entertained? Yeah. This is gladiatorial. But what you're responding to is the set dressing, the clothes, the everything, the whole package.
Yeah.
What's weird about him is every time he comes out and he's in the costumes or whatever, he kind of adopts it. But I was sort of thinking he was a bit like chicken. Is that whatever sauce you put over him, he takes on that flavour via the clothes and the rhythm and the dance and what Karen's done with him. But there's no flavour to him.
No.
Whereas with someone like, say, Ranveer, you can see within it is a very, very strong flavour of who she was
her
at the beginning
and
how she's got there, or Maisie as a sort of child star. There's something of them in there. And there's an absence. He just appears to be able to very efficiently take on the flavour of whatever Karen's taught him. I imagine he's a surprisingly better than I expected pupil, maybe.
Yeah,
but there's nothing. There doesn't appear to be. He's not bringing anything of him. If you look at that range of,
do you know why that is, Joel?
Because there's nothing there.
There's nothing there.
And I think that's a little bit scary to look at. But I think that may even be why the judges are overmarking him. It's because he is doing what's required.
Yeah.
But what's missing is the thing that they often object to, which is, well, Bill, you made that your own. I don't think Jamie ever makes any of these his own.
No, he really doesn't.
Whereas everyone else on that list, and a couple of people who should still be there, were definitely Clara was making those dances her own.
Yeah.
Bill makes
it's
them
so
his
baffling.
Own.
Like,
Harvey makes them. These bland kids, I thought, had nothing. But they've got lots of flavour, and there's something of them in there, but there's nothing of Jamie. He is just, he's taking on the flavour of whatever dance he's been paired with.
I just feel like he made them laugh in week three or whatever it was, put on a funny wig and decided to be the funny one because Bill was seemingly not going to be the funny one, but the comedy one.
Yeah.
And that's it. They're under his spell from that day to this. All the things they pick up other dancers for, they're not picking him up for.
Yes.
So your musicality isn't great, or you're not feeling the music, or you're doing all the steps, but there's no performance, or there's no... I don't know. Every dance seems to favour his not being in hold.
Yeah.
And I didn't see much of a change from that last night, even while the second dance we'll talk about later was some kind of hoedown thing where he didn't really have to be in hold that much. They just seem to be favouring the choreography to mean he can jump up and down and basically look like he's dancing.
He's got a very odd thing. They've given him, because you're always looking for the story and the journey that each character's got, and they've kind of given him Bill's story.
Yeah.
Which is he's supposed to be the clown. Because Bill took it seriously from the beginning.
Really seriously. They mentioned that last night.
Who's the guy who they keep saying, well, you make it your own, you make it entertaining, you make it fun. You're always fun to watch. And you go, oh, no, but weirdly, he's sort of not fun to watch. Bill's fun to
watch. He's young and presumably fit and should be a good dancer or not be there. But he seems to be neither of those things.
They give him a bye every week by saying, you're funny and you're fun. And actually, if you've seen Through the Evil, it's not fun to watch.
Not fun at all.
Just get angry.
It's really, really painful. So Shirley said it was joyous. And she said through, I don't know, I thought I almost felt like gritted teeth, but clearly I misread her. It's really clear you don't want to go home. Like the main thing about your performance is you don't want to go home. So words like energy and enthusiasm are used over and over again about him because that's all he's got. And I'm not saying that's nothing, but it isn't semi-final, you've really learned to dance and you're a natural dancer and you're good at dancing. Like it doesn't have those qualities.
I decided this week the phrase for him is he is a jammy dodger.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Jimmy Biscuits is a jammy dodger. He has just dodged his way into here and he's just, it's all good
three
fortune
dance
and good luck.
Offs. Three jammy dodger dance-offs.
And he's getting regularly the same marks all the time and it's just, you're going, you sort of shouldn't be here this late.
No, he really shouldn't. Jimmy Biscuits shouldn't be here. He should not be here. Motsy said he had energy and Craig said he needed more rotation and his free arm was a mess, but he was joyous. So even Craig was nice about it. They wheeled out their customary 3/8 and Jamie looked cross and said through gritted teeth, we're consistent, which obviously means he's cross that he's not getting marked more. He's not making any progress. That's what he's saying. He keeps on, again, like JJ, which I think was fair enough, he went last week, hitting your head on the limits of your abilities. Bang, bang, bang. He's been doing it since week three.
Yeah.
And yet still he's here. Then we had the terms and conditions with not Anton. That was his joke. Rob Brydon.
That's a good joke.
It was a good joke. He turned up. There are some people in showbiz. I've really enjoyed his work. I loved Human Remains, like obsessed with it. I really enjoy Would I Lie to You? Is that what it's called? There are two shows called like nearly the same.
Yes.
Yeah. Would I Lie to You? He's really funny. But as he gets older, I just sense this utter lack of warmth. Like there's something not nice going on in there. I don't know why.
Is that how you tell him from Anton?
Yes, I think so, because Anton's a happy little pixie, isn't he, compared to Rob Brydon.
It's good. The throwback, they're not Anton both ends of it, and they throw back and they showed Anton. I thought during this little bit, because this is like a comedy bit that you can do. And again, I was reminded of what watching Strictly was like during the Brucey years.
Yeah.
And I want to say that Tess and Claudia don't get enough props for having ended up as a really, really efficient and very good double act.
Yeah, I agree. Mark would not agree with you. I would agree with you wholeheartedly.
I think they're brilliant. I mean, it's hard to remember there were worries about saying, could two women helm a Saturday night show? Like,
yeah,
absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah, yeah.
But they've got, they're not Ant and Dec. There's not like a natural fizz between them, but they've worked out sort of straight man, funny man, straight woman, funny woman.
Thank you.
There you go. Straight human, funny human.
Thank you.
They've
got
a nice thing, but both of them are quite sparkly and they've got the right spirit for it. But there's a lovely thing I noticed this week happened two or three times. And this is no offence to the writers because it's a hard gig.
Oh, yeah.
But there used to be a framing that would happen where it would throw across from what was supposed to be a funny bit. And you'd see that Craig was in frame. And you realise that there would be a scripted bit where she'd go, and Craig is, and throw back. And your heart would sink knowing it was coming.
Yeah.
That it would be quite a lame joke. But they kept doing them and they'd just be links.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, thank God, because actually...
So you don't miss the bad jokes,
the
then.
Two of you are nice enough for me to see the two of you throwing a light bit of banter back and forth, slightly more bake-off-y level
of banter.
It doesn't need
to be so... Yes, the contrived stuff can go.
Yeah,
finally.
It felt really nice. You thought, oh, actually, you've got a naturalness now. And I think I hadn't noticed that a lot of the pre-prepared lines, setups and references to their old jobs, she's on Radio 1, but she's a bit of a broadcaster, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's all gone. And they've just left it with the fact that the two of them get on.
Yeah.
And it's really nice.
And they really
relaxing.
Do, I think. Definitely.
It's an S-Pod thing. The podcast revisiting S Club 7's insane TV show.
Yeah, I can't imagine anyone's binge-watched this. Anyone who's not on drugs.
Thank you for bringing this into my life. It was honestly truly appalling.
Guests helped me analyse the show in more detail than anyone ever asked for.
It feels weird to me to say the phrase sex object in a show that was aimed at six-year-olds.
Do you think this is one of the problems with this show is that 7 is too much?
It's an S-Pod thing from Great Big Owl.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, so next up we have Ranveer and Giovanni doing a waltz, a beautiful waltz, to our tune. Does anybody remember our tune?
Isn't it? I looked this up. Nina wrote a love theme from Zeffirelli's Romeo and Juliet.
That's what I said, our tune. Yeah,
yeah, funny. Yeah. That's what it's officially
called. Our tune.
Yeah,
but they're the actual words.
Yeah. I didn't realise it had words. Because obviously Dave Archer and the gang were singing the words to it.
Aww.
It did have words. They were in foreign as
no,
well.
No, I didn't hear them. I just heard our tune. Whenever Ranveer and Giovanni dance, I just tend not to write anything. And then I have to hastily try and scribble down my joy and enrapturement after the dance is finished. I just loved this. I wrote rather stupidly, we'd had three glasses of wine. She's dancing!
But I think that's the reaction.
Because she just makes me feel. That's what they all try and articulate, Motsy especially. They all try and articulate, you just make me feel lovely when you dance. You dancing is channeling something lovely from me into you.
Yes.
And it's beautiful to
what
watch.
She is. She remains in a way that Jeanette Marararara is the spirit of Strictly professionals.
Yeah.
Ranveer is spirit of Strictly celebrities.
Yes, exactly.
Because she's done the Angela Rippon journey. She is what you're paying to watch. You're paying to watch newsreaders dance and it be a surprise. And people to do a thing they thought was closed off to them, they could never do. She's doing that. And what she's got in everything she does is romance.
Yes, it's
her
so romantic.
Her story is, I can't believe I'm doing this.
Yeah.
And I can't believe I'm doing it with this guy who there's a lovely connection with. There's a romance in their dancing. But there's a romance in her being freed.
Yeah.
And the word I wrote down was classy.
Oh.
And there was this blue wash over the studio. It looked really ballroom dancey.
Mm-hmm.
It looked, and there was a fantasiness to it. It feels like this is, When she dances, it looks like she's having a dream.
Yes, it
that,
does.
That someone's, that she's going to wake up in a minute and be back with Piers Bloody Morgan on a desk talking about fishing quotas.
Oh, it was all a lovely dream.
But it's you can see in her eyes that she can't believe she's doing it. She wasn't left on her own. She's normally left on her own.
That's right.
And she was just, but she was.
But in a waltz, it tends to be. It's slow and very controlled and kind of twirly.
But she was so. What you're watching in this one, because she has been left on her own, he's had confidence to leave her on her own, her play her fantasy out. Mm. But this time around, her fantasy was to be dancing with a wonderful, dashing cavalry soldier in a beautiful waltz.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was about partnering.
Yes.
They looked like they were dancing together.
They really did.
Not a Jimmy Biscuits.
Where he's
two
just
separate people
performing
jiggling about.
Alongside someone. Yeah, no, for sure. Just a beautiful, beautiful dance. That tune genuinely has made my teeth itch for years because of our tune. Didn't do that at all last night. It was just lovely. Shirley and Motsy gave her a standing ovation. Shirley said it was stripped down and controlled, and she said it was eloquent. I think she meant elegant.
She
but
meant
I'm not
elephant.
Sure. She did mean it. We went through quite a few words. I was like, did she mean
elemental?
But anyway, Elnet.
She is the nation's auntie, isn't
she's
she?
She's so
Shirley?
Lovely. Yeah, and Motsy commented, I thought she was going down a bit of a blind alley, but it turned out to actually be a good dance remark. That she mentioned that Ranvi's hair was swept up in that lovely sort of frothy style, which really exposed her neck and the beautiful extension she has when she's in hold.
Her frame is lovely.
It is the best. Well, they said it's the best non-professional frame they've seen. They said it could be a professional's frame.
Well, she's
it's so
got,
beautiful.
What I think is really lovely about her when she starts dancing is everything flows. These people have learned dances really quickly, but her stuff is never mechanical.
Mm.
It never looks like she's learned it. It does look like she's dancing.
Really, really does,
Tess said a word in passing, when she was passing the judge, and she said, oh, it's so emotional.
Yeah.
I thought that's what she's got that a lot of the, even the really good dancers don't have sometimes.
Yes.
I always feel what Ranvi's feeling.
She has some way of communicating and expressing what's going on in there. Craig went in for the kill, basically, said that some of her footwork wasn't right. He said the dress was hiding a multitude of sins with the feet. And he just said it was a bit ropey, which I, obviously didn't see the same dance.
Yeah.
He gave her an 8 and the female judges gave a 9 apiece. But that, at this stage of the game, they seem to turn on Ranveer this week.
Yeah.
In a way that, I agree the jive, tricky and everything, but they just didn't, something went wrong this week with how they were talking about her. Well, not the women actually, but Craig just seemed to go for her. So yeah, an 8 at this stage of the game, it's kind of a bit disparaging. She got a lovely message from Kate Garraway. He obviously is having a hell of a time.
Yeah.
If you know anything about her situation, her husband's been in hospital since the beginning of the pandemic with terrible COVID symptoms. He's still
that was
still
a reminder
better,
of the world that this is supposed to be a salve against.
Yeah, exactly.
It was quite
emotional. I really felt for her this week because she's such a likable person. But it just felt like they've given her this dream week after week after week. And this week it felt like they were sticking a big pin in her bubble. And I wanted to kill them for it because
don't
I
do it in a waltz. That's
no.
The magic one. Don't spoil that.
Anyway, next up we have Bill and Otis Charleston to Won't You Come Home, Bill Bailey, where he reveals his name's not Bill Bailey.
It's Mark Bailey.
I've been voting for Bill Bailey all this time, and it actually is some guy called Mark. No idea.
His geography teacher called him Bill Bailey after the song.
Yes, that's right.
So yeah, this is his, they're playing his song. It's a bit like there's something about Jamie a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can get your song in.
But that was lovely though. And I thought, what a nice thing they were able to do. He got some training messages from lots of his old comedy buddies, Rich Hall and David Johnson, really funny people. And that was really charming and just sort of, I don't know, it's slightly less emotional than some of the other family messages, but it sort of reminded you that was his job. He was a stand-up.
Oh, yeah, no, he had a nice message from his niece, who's a frontline maternity nurse.
Mm.
And just, again...
Which seemed to really knock him for six, yeah.
Again, the idea that this is happening in a bubble, in a thunderdome of dance in the apocalypse, occasionally visions of the outside world when they're not just of a family sitting in a front room by a radiator. That corridor of people in scrubs.
All masked up and distance,
and you went, oh, right, that's what... I don't know. There's a certain, I think, okay, this is a frontline service too, because you are keeping the nation's spirits
truly
up.
Truly.
You are the ENTSA entertainers flown in.
He's an essential worker. Like, yeah. He must be kept safe at all costs. Genuinely, not even joking. So this dance, I just thought was, well, as usual, charming. His timing was great. There was one, I actually, they didn't notice it or they didn't mention it. I thought there was one time where his timing slightly fell out with OT, yeah, and then back in again.
He recovers well.
He does really recover well, yeah. And just a lovely performance, and kind of everything he's good at, the kind of big expressions and the clowning and the cheekiness. And it sort of reminded you that he's actually funny for a living. It was like, it was quite clever to get his, I guess, yeah, comedy buddies to kind of say, hey, go, because it reminds you of who he really is.
This is the first time he's had a chance to be sort of goofy.
Yeah.
Rather than the jokes usually that he's serious.
He's been so serious.
And obviously the second dance he's going to do, the joke is that he's over serious with that as well. This was him being goofy. What it reminded me of, because he's an unexpectedly good dancer,
yeah,
was of great silent comedy or black and white comedy. But
yeah,
it was like Oliver Hardy dancing.
Oh, with a beautiful, a very way, slim Oliver Hardy.
With Ollie, it's not even the weight. He doesn't look like he's about to be as light as he
no,
is.
True.
And as delicate as and precise. And the joke with Oliver Hardy was the precision, the southern gentleman, the little finger cocked all the time.
Yeah.
And when Ollie Hardy does commence to dancing in Way Out West and the that's what Bill was dancing like, with this sort of tripping delicacy,
yeah,
that you don't expect from a man who normally
completely
plays Enter Sandman
not,
on horns on stage.
Yeah.
He got this, he was doing lovely stuff like playing with, they always give him a prop. OT always gives him a prop.
Always.
He dashed across and got a glass down.
That's
down,
right. Yeah.
Stuff like that. And you're thinking, oh, you're just, this is being, you're rehearsing him a little bit like someone doing a physical slapstick comedy
routine.
It's
a routine more than a dance, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's always a routine
Which
element
is great.
To it. Well, yeah.
Again, it's just pure entertainment. His stuff has got silent comedy drilled slapstick in it.
Yeah.
And it's always really good.
Very good. The judges loved it with conditionally, I wouldn't say unconditionally. Craig said, "Don't you go home, Bill Bailey," which was nice. He said he enjoyed him goofing around and he loved the dance. He loved the routine. Yeah, Shirley mentioned that it sort of reminds us that you're funny, as well as, you know, this guy who's taking himself very seriously. And Motsy said it was soul food, which I agreed with. But the judges' marks came out as Craig 8, Shirley 8 and Motsy 9. So, you know, not quite as unreservedly enthusiastic as their comments, but, you know, solid.
Yeah, I think that what's happening with his position in the running is that I think everyone was expecting to be home by now.
Yeah.
And it's a little
He
bit,
probably was expecting.
But I think, in fact, he's been so serious. But he's done exactly what the contract is, which is come in and do the work.
Yeah.
And show a side of yourself you haven't shown before. That's what the show's about. He's come in and done that, so he deserves to be here.
He really does.
But he's definitely a turn they were expecting to go home earlier. So I think sometimes where they're voting, the public at home are going, oh, God, this is tens across
Bananas
the board, it's always
yeah,
delightful.
Yeah, yeah.
But the judges are going, oh, right, we shouldn't have to be rating someone who is not, I don't know, Sophie Ellis-Bextor by
yes,
this point.
Yeah.
We should be looking at someone who is just an astonishing natural dancer. He is dancing against the odds
to
a grade way above what you'd expect.
Which is why he's so beloved, I think, apart from seeming to be a solidly gorgeous bloke.
Yeah.
He is. He's stretching far beyond the bounds of what anyone expected of him and just looks like he's having a lovely time doing it.
Did you have the same thing as me where halfway through the routine I noticed Oti?
Yes, yeah, I hardly look at her sometimes. She's crazy. She's magnetic to your
eyeballs. For series on end, she's been the only person I can watch every time because she's so good. When she's partnered with somebody, that's a real achievement that Bill Bailey has partnered with her and they are equally as compelling to the extent sometimes you don't notice she's there.
It's true. It's amazing. And she does, her choreography with him is always, she knows exactly what to do with him to make him look, spry and kind of bouncy, but not to push him so far that he's having heart attack by the end. Because, he's in his 50s. It's like, that's a tough thing. Okay, next up we had Maisie and Gorka doing their couple's choice. Can't remember what they danced to, though.
No, yes, you can.
Can
it
I?
It was Getting Jiggy With It.
Oh, sorry, of course it was Getting Jiggy With It.
And this is the point at which I just wrote the word banned in my notebook.
They're having the time of their lives.
Someone said today on Twitter, they said, why don't they get Dave Arch and the band on It Takes Two? Obviously,
yes,
they're busy rehearsing. But I would happily watch a parallel stream of just playing.
Yes, for sure.
Because they can just turn on a sixpence and do six different styles in a row in quick succession.
Absolutely.
And master it. And they've got a vocalist who can do everything from Will Smith to bloody James Hetfield.
Incredible. I think there's usually four of them. They've stopped naming them this series, so maybe the lineup changes, or maybe they decided it would take too long to name them all.
But what a band.
But I think it was, when they do occasionally show the isolated camera on a member of the band, it always goes viral. And there was the most memorable one. Obviously, I'm obsessed with Ed Balls doing Gangnam Style.
Yeah.
But when I think it was Tommy sung in Korean.
Oh.
Gangnam Style. And they just put the camera on him and you just watched him obviously having to learn phonetically how to sing in Korean.
But
for
it's another thing that links this with the glory days of Saturday Night BBC Entertainment, shiny floor shows.
Yeah.
This is that live band in Parkinson.
That's where your licence fee's going.
Yeah, it's Saturday Night, Friday Night is Music Night. It's the BBC has got a house band, but it's not a house band who, like in the 20s, would do like the dance hits of the day.
No.
That equivalent today is someone who can do Metallica and the Fresh Prince.
Yeah, completely.
And do them both without it ever sounding lumpen.
Well, you don't notice them half the time, which is the point. That's incredible that you don't really notice.
But they were amazing.
This flawless band. Yeah, absolutely. Huge props to them this episode because they had to do an awful lot. Versatile beyond all measure. So this routine, the first thing I absolutely loved about it, normally, because they've been obsessed, the costume people, with twinning their couples a lot this series, certainly the ones that look like each other or the ones where they don't want to have them being like a gentleman and lady being sexy times together.
We've forgotten that never happened.
Mentioned
stopped.
No names. Yes, we glossed over that one. They gave her strategic COVID to stop anything happening there. But Maisie and Gawker, I don't think have ever had this kind of styling before. And it was great. It wasn't like she did a sexy ripped jeans lady version of baggy jeans and a bomber jacket. She just pretty much had the same clothes on as him. And it was just two people dancing this incredible, I mean, my God, the variations and speed and the muscle control, the slow sections, the fast sections, in a basically a street dance was just, I thought she was mind-blowing.
She was holding herself. She was landing slowly occasionally. I just noticed it saying...
Yeah, against gravity somehow, seemingly.
What the celebrities sometimes do with a high-energy dance is give it loads and loads of energy. And she was just knowing exactly when to rein it in. And it was just as exciting when she was sort of going slightly slower as when she was going fast. It's the quick slow, which is dancing.
But you don't expect that in this kind of routine, though. I think it was just amazing.
It was very exciting. I like the fact they had the bleachers, the sort of the sports benches thing, which was there because she'd been so sensational on a bench before.
Yeah,
and he's going, okay, she can, watching her go up and down steps. Weirdly,
with
she's
so
brilliant
confidently.
At.
Like you think you're going to fall over. She does. She shows no fear. There before the dance, there was she got messages from home. She got one from her granddad, which properly made me cry. Aww. It was just really sweet. I can't explain why. It's just clearly she won't have seen him for a long time.
Yes.
And again, that just brings it back.
She's 19.
Yeah, exactly.
She's still at home with her family. She was saying this is the first time she's been away from home.
I know. And she's covered in pot noodles.
Yeah.
And...
this is her freshers week.
Yeah, it totally is.
Being very well behaved.
So, the routine was, I mean, mind-blowing. I mean, spoilers, it got a perfect score and you can see why. And she said it was the best fun she's ever had out on the dance floor. But she can make it look that easy. She can have fun while doing something that technical.
Yeah.
She is a dancer. That's it. End of. So Shirley said she's the queen of pop. Did she mean the queen of pop and lock or just like the queen of pop?
Well, hip hop. She's lost confidence in the meaning of the word hip hop.
It's fine. And then Motsi, what have I written here? Rapping street dancers. Oh, no, sorry. She's representing rapping street dancers. Repping. I've written the word repping while drunk. Motsi said she was representing a different style of dance up there and making everyone feel included. That's what the show's about, doing every different style of dance. Still no jazz or modern or tap, but you know.
Or moshing.
We got
moshing this week, didn't we?
Morris dancing. When does Morris dancing get a fair shout on Strictly Come Dancing? That's what I want to know. I'm just saying. No one's mentioned it. Someone had to say it. Bells on their ankles. And then Craig said he'd been waiting all series for that dance and thank you.
I really like that. I think Craig has been brilliant this series.
Yeah.
In terms of knowing what his role is. And he's slightly toned down the meanie.
Oh, yeah.
Because we don't want that this year.
It was clear from... In fact, I was worried the first couple of episodes that he was just going to be mealy-mouthed, kind of insincere, nice guy, which would not have been escapism
in
my book.
His job is to be a panto villain.
Yes.
But he has known exactly when he needs to hold back and then just say, that was spectacular.
Yeah.
I've been surprised how much... I suppose it's because there's three of them. We've not got a Bruno to take a little bit more of the sugar in against the salt.
Yeah.
But he's known exactly... judged really well when he just needs to say what the nation's feeling, which was, that was brilliant.
Yeah.
Didn't we just enjoy that? And he's been prepared to shift his persona a little bit to get that in.
Yeah, for sure. So they have a Viennese waltz still to come. So they're going from, you know, just that incredible street dance to a completely different style in one episode. And she is full days at EastEnders at the moment. So she's training until midnight every day.
Yeah.
Two dances. I mean, what she achieved achieves most weeks is incredible. But this week, to do two dances and work a full-time gig is just absolutely astonishing.
I imagine, I mean, she's been in Eton since she was six or whatever. She's probably used to them flouting things like the child labour laws, sending her up chimneys and things. That's, I imagine that's how you make EastEnders.
Can we tell the lovely story now about talking about child labour laws, about one of the older actors in Harry Potter, who shall go unnamed. I mean, that doesn't really matter now. But they were an old pro doing quite a big role in Harry Potter. And they would make sure that if they were doing scenes with child actors at Hogwarts, that the younger one, a couple of younger ones would be standing next to them in shot, say, come on, you come and stand over here next to me. And the kids would be like, wide eyes, and wow, thanks so much, mister. And they'd be in the scene because he knew that they had to go home at a certain time, which means they would have to rap for the day if the children were in his shot and he'd have to rap with them. I just think that's clever.
Kids as props. There you go. That's always rated alongside the story I heard that Michael Caine has a dresser who comes he's had since the 60s almost, who he summons. And apparently whenever he's doing his Batman thing and he's dressed as Alfred, he knows there'll be a wide shot, a medium shot and a close-up. They'll have to get in that order. Yeah. It's how you shoot it. And his dresser will rush in and take the trousers first, then the jacket, and then finally the hair, and then he can go home. So he gets undressed between those shots.
Amazing,
because he knows the trousers are shot. Kenny, come and get the trousers. I love stories of actors who've made too many films.
It's like, let's just get this efficiently done. Okay, yes, it's art up to a point, but I know I need to get my dinner. So to finish off this section of the show, we have Harvey and Jeanette doing a rumba, the only rumba of the series. No one else will be doing one. This is it now.
Yeah.
They've managed, because of a shorter run, not everyone is going to get to every dance. This is the most notoriously difficult one, certainly for them, for a man, a male celebrity. Really, really hard to do. And it was To Only You, which is one of my favourite songs. If you've ever heard the, my favourite cover of it is Aidan Moffat,
right,
who did it on a Christmas album a couple of years
Flying
ago.
Pickets, but...
No, obviously that used to be my favourite until I heard the gruff, sweaty Scottish man do it. And then it was like, all bets are off. Love that. You should track that down. It's beautiful. So they did a rumba, To Only You. It started off in this gorgeous, CGI, frankly, did work on this one.
Oh, the snow globe. And again, very, very Christmassy, very, very magic-y. I liked that.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure whether it was a prop or a CGI for a second.
I know.
It couldn't be a prop.
I mean, they'd be dead if they were sealed inside a glass
dome. But I mean,
to
entertain us, who knows what they'll do? It's tough times.
I'm just imagining like a Jeanette gasping for air. No, don't kill the spirit of Strictly. You can't. The whole show will die if she dies. So the rumba, obviously, there's a really complicated role for the man to do, apart from all the control and the stillness and resistance and the strength. There's got to be a sort of, I don't know, he's got to be gently in command of the dance.
Yeah.
And because Harvey's sort of young and callow and fresh-faced, I don't think he did that. But the version he gave us, I think, was sort of like, we talked about it last night, this beautiful teen romance.
Yeah,
it was
sort of Romeo and Juliet feel to it.
Sweet, romantic, you know, they were sort of grinding all up against each other. But it was very, very beautiful and kind of touching and very romantic.
Yes, their characters felt sort of like they were equal and sort of entwined with each other, which isn't necessarily what you do with a rumba normally. But I thought they'd chosen dance moves and a character for him that suited him, because you know he's limited in what he can say.
Yeah.
Because he looks, he's basically Private Pike. He's got a scarf from his mum. And that's the persona he's got. And he can't sell.
He
can't sell a savage warrior. But they did this right. And it was, again, a little bit like the Ranveer thing. There was romance in
this. It was incredibly emotional, wasn't it?
There's been a lot of romance in this without needing to have all the usual curse of Strictly grinding.
It's been a lot of platonic, well, to me, it's coming across as platonic romance, and it's lovely. I mean, obviously, I do hope that Ranveer and Gio are banging, because she deserves it, and it would be a lovely distraction for a few weeks. But there's been a lot of just like good friendships that seem to be forming, and over and above the usual, you know, to and fro of Strictly romances. But the dance itself, I thoroughly enjoyed, and I didn't expect him to be anything less than really proficient and skilled at hitting all of his marks and making beautiful shapes. He did make really lovely shapes.
Yeah, the shaping was lovely. It was all very sinuous.
Actually,
the other thing as well, it was totally flowing.
Yeah.
And it just wouldn't stop. They were undulating and flowing around each other. He's very long, she's shorter. The mismatch of their physical shape was really fascinating, the way they fitted and moved. And then Craig was very critical and said it was all a bit stop-starty.
He said the opposite. He said that he did a move, stopped.
Couldn't see that at all.
That it stopped dead in its tracks, he said, between moves. No, I didn't see
it was
that.
Like water.
And Shirley said she didn't really see that either.
Yeah.
But Motsi talked about his leg action, his Cuban motion, whatever that is. But she also mentioned maybe in the transitions it wasn't completely fluid. Again, I didn't notice that, but they obviously do.
It's like I don't know as much about dance as they do.
What do you mean?
I know, it's stupid. I think we've had enough of experts.
Anyway, the scores are in. Harvey and Jeanette for that absolutely flawless, to me, rumba, not to the judges, a 7 from Craig and 2 8s. So it was officially worse than Jimmy Biscuits bopping around as usual, looking cross and angry and sweaty. No, it wasn't.
No.
Absolute bunkum. So yeah. I ended that half of the show quite cross.
Yes, and rightly so. I think that this has become a battle not against the judges this year, but against whatever Jimmy Biscuits is getting every time around. Because he's almost like setting the standard. He very often is an early dance. He comes in and you go, yeah. So that's what the judges think is acceptable. And then anyone who dips below that, you go, what were you watching?
I know, genuinely, do they ever go back over an episode and say, oh, we gave him fewer marks than Jimmy Biscuits? That's probably not fair in retrospect.
I think Jimmy Biscuits releases a gas, a persuasion
gas.
Honestly,
it's the only it's
a pheromone of some sort, or just gives them biscuits.
I think it's that Candy Kitten's awful sweets have clearly got some kind of mind control drugs in them, and he, you know, like you said, drops them off on every doorstep of every judge, every voter in the land. Yeah, he's got some evil plan, I'm sure of it. I am starting to sound a bit obsessed, aren't I?
Yes, you are.
Okay, I'll try and stop that for part 2. This is the end of part 1. When we come back, we'll have the result. We'll know who's going into the final. I'm scared. I won't sleep till then. I mean, I'm not going to go to sleep anyway. It's the middle of the afternoon. But you know what I mean. I'm bricking it, basically. Thank you for listening. And join us straight after the results show tonight to find out. Well, you'll probably find out because you'll watch the show. To find out how we feel about who's in the final. I do hope it's not angry crying, but I have a feeling it might be.
What if they're all sent home except Jimmy Biscuits?
I mean, in a way, that'll be... that he'll probably have paid for that to happen.
Right, okay.
And then we can just judge it on that, and that's fine.
Okay, then we know what's happened. At least we'll know.
At least we'll know. At least we'll understand. Why? See you next time. Bye.
Heavy Pencil.
An actor of my experience, you just get run dry.
A podcast sitcom with Anna Crilly and Tony Gardner.
I played Edmund Gelder, and he played Fanny Snatch.
The Observer called it
a lovely thing, wonderfully funny, pitched perfectly, produced with a light touch.
I'm not having any more of this. I need you to pull me off immediately.
Heavy Pencil from Great Big Owl.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.